Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's Friday. It's the end of the week. It's good.
I was up till like 1 in the morning because I saw the 9:50 showing of Star Wars, which we're not going to talk about.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
I saw the 9:45 showing, yeah. I was in the same boat.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about it. We're going to talk about that later on a different podcast.
Indeed.
But I am a little sleep deprived, and I have three podcasts today too. Four now, actually. This one counts. It's now four.
This one counts. Yeah, all right.
Four. I don't put this on the calendar, right? This is the part of the aggressively casual concept of the Secret Colors podcast. Sure.
Secret sixes.
This week's secret color is pink. Don't tell anyone. is that I don't put it on a calendar either, and that invariably involves one of us sending a note to the other one saying so. Podcast? I'm like, okay.
That's not a mine either.
iMac Pro Week this week.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed, interestingly, I got up this morning and saw that you had written a Six Colors piece about this and thought to myself, hey, I just wrote a very, very similar column like that to Macworld.
Yeah. I saw your post linking to it on Six Colors and I thought, Dan and I wrote the same story.
Great ideas. Great ideas.
Yep. Well,
I mean, that's the story everybody's interested in right now is not only the iMac Pro, but like the Pro story, the overall Pro story, Mac Pro Mac user.
Okay.
I don't know how to frame this. The story for professionals on the Mac. How about that?
Yes. That's sort of what I was saying is professional, or I think I said like high end Mac users at one point. I mean, it's like there are different ways we could phrase it, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I was definitely getting commentary. Let's put it that way. Commentary from people via Twitter who were arguing that this product is a flop because of its lack of upgradability, the iMac Pro. And to me, I understand. I understand where they're coming from. You know, professionals in the past have definitely spent a lot of time tricking out their computers, much in the way you might think of somebody like hot rodding their car. But that is not really what the Mac is these days, for the most part. And it hasn't really been that way for a long time. You watch the trend lines, and we've gone pretty much unquestioningly in every case from like upgradable computers to less and less upgradable computers. Like that is Apple's kind of their jam, right? Like even on the iMac, I think the 27 inch is the only one, 27 inch 5K is the only one that you can actually even upgrade the RAM on yourself.
Correct.
So nobody should be surprised by this. And it's also, this product was put out there as we have a lot of pro users who use the iMac already, and we want to give them a better version of that. So if you go in thinking about it that way, it makes perfect sense. And yep. They've got this other shoe that's still to drop, which will hopefully, depending on the lessons they have learned, address those users who feel like upgradability and internal expansion is a huge part of their workflow.
Shoe dropping is my headline, in fact, for my story, right?
Yeah, I used it. It was in mine as well. I thought, oh yeah, we're definitely on the same page.
because the whole idea here, I mean, what I said in my story is, if Apple hadn't announced it was bringing back the Mac Pro, this would be a bigger deal because all the weight of expectations of Apple's high-end user base would be crashing down on the iMac Pro. Instead, it's the first shoe to drop in a revitalization of Apple's Pro Mac desktop line, right? There's a Mac Pro coming, and we all know it. And so the iMac Pro, I get like, it's like everybody had their arguments about, well, we're not doing the Mac Pro anymore, but we have an iMac Pro, and that's good enough. And all their arguments about that were ready to go. But you can't make those arguments. It's an iMac. It's not meant to carry the whole product line. We could have that argument. I think there's an argument to be made.
This is why you need to make your arguments fresh rather than relying on canned arguments.
I know. That's right. Because those arguments are 6 months out of date now.
Yeah. I like to whip up a fresh batch every time.
And, you know, I was listening to ATP this week and Marco said, you know, come on, like upgradability kind of doesn't happen anymore. I mean, I've only opened the RAM door on my iMac one time, and that was to put the RAM in at the beginning.
Right. Exactly. It's not like you're pulling RAM in and out all the time.
No, I mean. And I get like, you know, you can take an old Mac Pro and put a modern GPU in it and stuff. Like, and that's great. And I hope the Mac Pro actually does that. But let's be honest, that is a very limited market.
It's a very small portion of the market. And what to me is the bigger, more interesting part of this story that I think if you sort of zoom out and take the 35,000 foot view is that Apple has made a huge commitment to the pro market, because not only do you have the iMac Pro and the upcoming Mac Pro, but you also have the 5K iMac, which is no slouch in the professional department, depending on what your profession is. And Apple has acknowledged that the pro, quote unquote, pro market, you know, or what many people think of as the pro market, is not necessarily a huge chunk of its overall sales. Right? And they depend. They broke it up in their interview by discussing like people who use pro software, people who sometimes use pro software.
Yeah,
right?
It depends
like,
on how you define it.
There's a wide swath of what that means.
And if there's a natural tendency for people to think that it's that the market is them, like that's a natural tendency.
Right.
And you
exactly.
know, it's not a fun conversation to have with people to say people who do what you do are not plentiful enough for Apple to build an entire computer for you.
Right.
Even though sometimes that's true. The advantage of something that's truly modular and upgradable, like perhaps the new Mac Pro will be, is that it can be configured to be different things for different people.
Right.
The disadvantage of the iMac Pro is that, you know, it's going to have Xeons and it's going to have that big GPU. And if you just need a GPU or you just need Xeons, it's too bad. You got to take both. And that's just how it is. But I think the point you made that Apple has made is totally true, which is the iMac is a pro machine at this point.
Absolutely.
Most, in fact, professional, quote unquote, use cases. It is incredibly fast. I mean, I got a 4 gigahertz i7 that's 3 years old, and it's still like incredibly fast. And I've got it crunching through video, and I've got it crunching through, you know, these crazy, you know, auto noise removal features and things like that. Like, it's pretty impressive. It's not an iMac Pro, but it's going to cover the needs of, you know, a huge percentage of the base.
Sure.
The question is, like, what is the role of something like this, and how many of them are they going to sell?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I use an iMac 5K from this year, and I don't do nearly as much in terms of hugely intensive processes, but I do edit some audio. And frankly, for my purposes, this machine flies.
Yes.
Right. And like, other than that, I use my machine for web browsing and writing words.
Yes.
That is not an intensive process.
No, you could use a PowerBook 100 for that.
Exactly. Yeah, I could whip out my old PowerBook G3 sitting over in the corner. So yeah, the fact that they're saying we have not only created these new models, but we're sort of creating a variety of models to appeal to a variety of different quote-unquote pro users is, to me, like Apple saying, We're investing a ton in this, in the whatever you want to define the professional segment of the market as, but like, we are trying to address a broad set of needs across the professional market. Everything from people who do occasional like video or audio editing or, you know, graphic design, all the way up to people doing VR development, right? Like, that to me is a big deal, because it's really them putting their, you know, their flag in the ground there and saying like, yep, we are serious about committing to the pro market.
Yeah, it's important, but not huge. It's it's platform defining in some ways.
Yes. Yeah.
It can be very profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's the truth of it. And it is where Apple made a whole lot of its money
for a
long time. But Apple's a more successful, one of the downsides of Apple being so much more successful in terms of selling computers to just regular people, let alone the iPhone, but like just Macs, is that the percentage of its user base that's using these things is just tiny. And
right.
It doesn't seem tiny if you're in it, but it, in the overall scheme of things, it is tiny. First off, desktop computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's,
already
a
tiny percentage.
Yeah. That's a quarter of the Macs out there, and then most of those are iMacs,
right?
And I mean,
there were points where like the lines and the unit sales in like Mac stuff was you could sort of break down and figure out roughly speaking, right? Because there was a point at which they would say, like, oh, laptops are 50% of what we're selling. Laptops are 60% of what we're selling. Laptops are 70%, right? Like, and, you know, you got to assume that the iMac is far and away the biggest and bestseller in Apple's lineup. Why? Because there is, I mean, it was somewhat disingenuous for Phil Schiller, I think, in the interview that he gave to the certain, they had that sort of small roundtable session back in April. And he's like, yeah, so many of our professionals choose to do stuff on the iMac instead of the Mac Pro. And I thought that was slightly disingenuous because the Mac Pro at that point had not been updated in 3 years. So if you wanted something with the latest stuff in it, you had to buy an iMac. So yeah, most of your users are using the computer that you are selling. That's absolutely true. Would they maybe prefer another computer if they had the option? Also possibly. Depends on their use cases. But yeah, I think it's bold move to go into, as you said, like a thing that's already a percentage of a percentage in terms of the market and address that. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting move for them to make. And I think maybe part of it is, I don't know if they feel like maybe they lost ground in the professional markets, because there certainly has been more competition in that space in recent years than there was maybe a decade ago, I feel like, where the Mac was really doing exceptionally well. And, you know, people used to say, oh, Mac's great if you want to do, if you know, if you need to do graphics work or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But at a certain point, people started using Windows or various other products, or even, you know, consumer level products, depending on what they were doing. So it's interesting to watch them try to delve back into that.
Yeah. So I ordered one.
Yeah.
There it is.
So I saw.
Yeah.
That is a pricey computer.
It is. You know, I'm still not entirely convinced that I did the right thing, but I've been thinking about it for months now, and I really can use those processor cores. I really can. That's the thing, is I spend a lot of time denoising audio for various podcasts, as well as doing some video stuff. And, you know, I could just keep on going the way I am now, but it takes a long time. And I could just get a new iMac, which would be faster and have faster storage. The SSDs are a lot faster in the current models than they are in my original 5K iMac. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I could really use those cores. So I go back and forth about it. It's a real question. I do wonder sometimes if I would not. It has the added benefit of being a product that I can write about.
Sure.
Right? That is a bonus. It's sort of like I'm on the fence about it, and then also I can get one and write about it, which is useful.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, it's not cheap. And I and people are talking about, oh well, the sweet spot is the 10 core and all that. And it's like, nope. No. I want the base model. Nice thing about it is that you just buy a Visa mount kit for it instead of buying the you know, with my 5K iMac, I had to buy the Visa mount version. So it doesn't have a foot, and it can't have a foot now. I will have to buy, if I do repurpose it and or sell it, I will need to buy a Visa mount stand to put it on.
Wow.
Yep.
That seems, yeah.
But the iMac Pro, it's like, yeah, sure, you can pop off, just like it used to be on the iMac. You can pop off the back and put on a Visa mount, and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and when I got my iMac, I ended up opting for the more or less top-of-the-line model as far as processor was concerned. And honestly, I am pretty happy.
It's going to be good for a while. Yeah, you're good for a while. Well, I mean,
right, and even that's like undercutting the iMac Pro price by like, it was still like $2,000 cheaper, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so I've had this Mac 3 years, and it's in pretty good shape. I mean, it's a fast computer. I should be able to sell
it. There's nothing wrong with that one.
No.
I mean, yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, people complain a lot in recent years about the Mac not getting as much love. And so, curious to see, especially as this is merely the first announcement, if that gets anybody to change their opinions or not.
Yeah, I don't know. Marco's theory is that so many people will just use the iMac Pro that they'll never update the Mac Pro again, because it'll turn out that nobody wants it and that everybody's just getting the Mac Pro. I don't know if I believe that, but who knows? That's one of the points that I made in my article is we still have, and Gruber made this point too, which is like, there's a lot of stuff that we just can't judge yet. And one of those things is this a transitional form, like the, you know, is it going to end up with Face ID, but right now, but it's still got the T2, so it's got the ARM processor that's doing bits. Is that going to go into the whole product line? But the other thing is just Apple's ongoing commitment to updating Macs. If I had to distill all the complaints down to one single complaint, it's why don't Macs get updated when there's newer, faster hardware to put in them?
Right.
And Apple's, you know, it updated the MacBook Pros, so that's good, but it's going to need to release these systems, and then it's going to need to update them, right? That's the next part. And we're not going to know, like, it's going to be a year plus before we know that about the iMac Pro, and longer for the Mac Pro, because it's not even out yet.
Right. I mean, yeah, that was a huge problem with the Mac Pro, was just the long languishing of updates, right? Like, in theory, somebody pointed out, I think it was in the members, our member Slack, that, like, you could actually access stuff inside the 2013 Mac Pro pretty readily. And some of that stuff, like the processor, was on a socket, so you could like pop it out. But apparently there just was kind of a dearth of things that you could plug into it. So yeah, you gotta be able to support all the ends of that equation. If your value proposition is this is upgradable, you got to have things that you can upgrade it with. And that might be a challenge. I don't know. I mean, certainly a lot easier now than it was before. Apple products also relied on an x86 architecture, because in theory you can pop in, you know, internal upgrades as long as the hardware is supported. It should be compatible or whatever, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, do you feel, I have moved out of the component market so much, I don't know if those companies are still investing in making Mac support for these products because nobody could do anything with them.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard that, like, I think Syracuse said on ATP that, like, graphics cards, that's pretty top of the line graphics cards, can go in the old, like, 2010 Mac Pro and be supported in software because they wrote software support in for this stuff. And so it's like, oh, and it comes along with and all that. But yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff is just, I mean, we talk about it over and over again, which is there's the imagination of upgrades and the reality of them. And the reality is everybody wants an upgradable thing and nobody upgrades them. Like, nobody. And somebody will say, but I did. It's like, yeah, I bought Power Macs for years and I put in a new graphics card one time.
I upgraded a processor in my Power Mac G3 once. I put a G4 in at some point, you know, to eke like another year of life out of it, essentially.
It was also at the very end of the life. And we can, you know, this is how Apple's doing this. One of the ways that Apple gets to make the machines that they do is that they trade some traditional expandability and things, and this is the direction they're going. And that's the, you know, that's the truth of it. That this is an iMac and iMacs aren't upgradable essentially, and you just have to live with it or don't buy it, which is fine, but you'll be hard pressed to find a Mac, maybe the new Mac Pro, maybe not, that will give you what you want. And that's just, you know, it's kind of the way of the world. And in the grand scheme of things I'm worried about from Apple, not making a customizable tower with video cards you can plug and unplug, not high on my list, honestly, of priorities for Apple. Like, I'm sorry to people who want to plug and unplug graphics cards, but I look at that and I think, you know, you're better off buying a computer and running it for 2 or 3 years and selling it, which Marco said on ATP, sell it to a person who doesn't care about it as much. Take the value that hasn't depreciated out of it, should probably still be pretty valuable. Go on and get the next one. Or if you're in an organization, you're rolling systems down. So, you know, a wave of people get this year's and the next wave gets the next year's and the next wave gets the next year's, and you have a 3 or 4 year replacement cycle. And that's just what it is, rather than this sometimes unrealistic expectation that you're going to be able to be just changing the components and keeping it around forever, because that's a lot.
Sure.
That's just not how most of the world works.
It's not where the technology is. It's not where the cutting edge is anymore, right? It used to be that was the cutting edge. It's like, oh, new graphics cards come out, you pop these in your computer, it'll give you a whole new lease on life, right? But like, computing, the cutting edge of computing these days is smartphones and tablets. It's stuff
and a lot
that is
of,
more consumer oriented.
A lot of features and speed and size come from not having to build around expandability.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably defend the iMac Pro if they didn't have the Mac Pro anymore, because I think that it's in most cases kind of unrealistic. And like, if you're using Apple, you're buying into their system and it's a closed system and that's just how it is. And I get that that can be annoying if you have very specific needs that Apple is not fulfilling. But, you know, this is the... there is a different conversation to be had, which is if you're somebody who doesn't care about platform and you could just as easily do your job on Windows or Linux, and you look over there and you're like, ah, yes, but I can configure my own Linux or Windows setup for a workstation and I don't need this thing, so I'll just get this cheaper thing and it'll be cheaper. It's like, okay, that's fair enough. I'm not a person who is going to use Windows or Linux, and I don't feel like a large portion of my audience is like, whatever, I could use Apple products or not. I get that impression anyway, that they're probably pretty committed to the platform. And the frustration comes from the fact, like I wrote a few weeks ago, that means that you're cornered, right? Like Apple is forcing you to either make a huge platform change or take what they give you. And that's when people get angry. But there are always going to be some people at the edges who are going to get, you know, are going to get hurt by Apple's decisions not fulfilling them, and that's just how it is, and it's too bad, but that's the way it is. So I don't know.
Decisions get made.
Yeah. So this is a tough one. I'm optimistic for the same reason that Syracuse is optimistic about it. It's like, I want to believe, I know, but it's like they're making a Mac Pro, right? They turned over those MacBook Pros faster. I feel like there are signs that Apple is changing their approach there. And I hope they keep it up, because the danger is that they will just fall back on their old ways. Also, there needs to be a new Mac Mini in 2018.
Yeah, well, I kind of keep wondering if there's some sort of Mac Pro, Mac Mini hybrid of customization.
I don't see how that is possible.
Yeah, I can't see how it would hit both those boxes.
You can't build a device, I don't think. PC builders, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to think of, like, could you really build a device that can be run a Xeon with a bajillion cores, or configure it with an i3?
Yeah, no, not in that.
I don't
not
think
in that.
So, because you'd have to build, even if you could get it to run both, you'd have to have it be such an expensive bit of hardware to be capable of the high end. And I think the bus speeds don't work and all that. It's been a while since I've done lots of bus speed math. But it's like, I don't think so.
For me, I think what it points to is more of a desire that a Mac Mini model where it's like, you know, it's easy to upgrade.
It's
right? Like that's what I want.
Well, one argument would be, instead of the Mac Mini, you create this X-Mac, the mythical mid-range Mac Mini tower that our friends always want.
I feel like that was a Dan Frakes.
And Rob Griffiths. They both wanted it and still want it. And I guess what you could do is you could build an enclosure and then potentially have essentially two different computers that go in it. And there's like a pro set of build it, and there's a more consumer set of build it, but it all goes in the same box. But even then, why would you do it in the same box? One of them has totally different thermal constraints than the other one does.
Absolutely.
Which is why I feel like it's far more likely that there's going to be a little Mac Mini. I'm still a believer that they're going to make the Mac Mini smaller, although there's a question about money there, because they can, you know, the Mac Mini can be cheaper if they still have a spinning disk in it. But I feel like Apple doesn't need to make it cheaper. In fact, Apple may not care if it's cheaper and put SSD in it and just say it starts out with a 256 SSD. Just too bad. That's all you get.
Actually, because, I mean, I assume what they do, honestly, is use something like the SSDs in the, you know, in the MacBook Air and the MacBook line, right? Well, where it's just a set of, like, a chip thing that you put in instead of the current Mac Mini still uses like a 3.5-inch
format. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying is that, you know, although people have argued that the Mac Mini will probably just be, you know, up speed bumped at some point, I think they're going to redesign it. I think that's why we haven't seen it. And I think it is going to do what they did when they took the optical drive out, which is change the hardware and embrace the fact that there's no spinning disk in it anymore. And yeah, they'll have a standard, like with a MacBook or whatever, they'll have a standard, maybe a slot where the SSD goes, and you could theoretically drop in a different kind later, or when you configure it, they drop in a different kind. But basically, it's not, you know, it's not the shape and size of a hard drive anymore. It's literally just a chip you know, drop in for the SSD. Right. And that, right. and that's a very different computer, and that's not upgradable at all, but it's small and still pretty powerful. And like I said, you know, on, I said on a million podcasts now, like the Intel Nook shows that that kind of product can exist and would be pretty, pretty great as a little Mac Mini. And then you go the whole other way with the Mac Pro, right? I just feel like that's, I get how everybody wants to stick them together, but I just don't see how they go together. I don't see how they can be the same computer.
Yeah, no, I think it's more of that for me is totally a wishful thinking,
wishing
that the Mac Mini had the simplicity, because, you know, like you, I've upgraded components in my Mac Mini. It's a pain in the ass.
It's terrifying. Well, and I could see a Mac Pro that has one of the things that I wonder about the Mac Pro, because everybody's said like, oh well, imagine a Mac Pro starts at $5,000. What's the Mac Pro going to start at? And I'm going to guess it's going to start less.
Yeah, because there's no display.
Because one, there's no display, and two, I would not be shocked if the Mac Pro is configurable at a lower end.
Sure,
right?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
That is your, and that becomes your moment where it's like, look, the Mac Mini is not for you. If you're one of these people who wants the mythical mid-range Mac Mini tower, you're essentially somebody who used to buy a Power Mac, which is a Pro Mac, but you bought it back in the day because real computer users use the Power Mac, right? Well, if there are configs that are relatively not, they're not cheap, but they're also not $7,000 for a Mac Pro, maybe people will buy those with a lesser video card and a slower processor with fewer cores, but still not a cheap computer, but what you get is all of your beloved modularity. Maybe. I mean, maybe so. Maybe you could get a Mac Pro that starts at $3,000 or $2,500 even as a base model and then scales all the way up to, you know, many, many, many thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I mean, I think it will be interesting next year when it's like Apple's got, you know, whenever these devices come out, if Apple does really have like a wide range of desktops again, just when people started to think the desktop had sort of been like, who uses desktops anymore? But people do.
People do. I mean, hey, we do.
Yeah, that's true.
This is my whole Mac experience now. I mean, I basically don't use my MacBook Air anymore. I use an iPad. So my Mac experience is at a desk. It's the desk operating system.
Yeah.
Not the disk operating system. Yeah. Disk operating system, DOS, totally different. This is desk operating system.
Yeah, well, I'm still trying to I'm seeing about getting, my mom has an iMac that's from the early 2010s, so like 2011, 2012 maybe, and she's just reached the point where I think we're going to get her a new iPad for Christmas. And part of it was, she's like, oh, the desktop's gotten kind of slow. It's like, well, okay, it's running a spinning disk drive, all these things. Like, yeah, I could take it apart and speed it up a little bit, but is there a point to that? What do you still do on this? And she's like, well, I like writing on it. I was like, what if we just got you a keyboard for your iPad? And she's like, yeah, that might work. It's like, I don't know that you need an iMac anymore. There's not a lot of stuff that you do on that you couldn't do on an iPad. And she's been a happy iPad user for a long time, and I think she probably uses her iPad a lot more than she uses her iMac. And, you know, they already have a MacBook Pro in the house that my dad has, so it's like, if you ever really need something that only a Mac can do, you know, it's there. They've got a safety net. But, yeah, it's just, why waste the time for me to upgrade the components of that iMac or spend, you know, a couple $1,000s on a new iMac, when, you know, it's not really there for an appreciable reason. I'm not sure I think a lot of people are in that boat. And
yep.
That boat is sinking.
Oh, no.
Get out of the boat.
It sprung a leak.
It's unfortunate.
Just start bailing until the new Mac Pro comes.
Until the new Mac Pro comes.
It might be a while. Well, good week. You know, I like when things happen. Because this is traditionally a dead time, because everything is already shipped because everybody's selling it for the holidays. And then here comes this product that is not a stocking stuffer and is just for...
Do not put it in your stocking. It's way too big, people.
Well, you need a big... If you have a large stocking. Yeah, so it's good for us to have something to talk about.
And it's got me wondering a little bit since they announced the HomePod pushback. It's like, okay, is the HomePod pushback to like March? Or is it pushed back to, like, June?
Oh, yeah.
That's like the next thing that was on my list. And they're like, it was kind of indeterminate.
Or January, even. I mean, it could be right around the corner.
Yeah, it could be next week, right? Yeah, I don't think so, but maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
I got questions. I'm curious to see. Because one would think if they had been preparing it for being shipped by the end of the year, that they must have been close, right? Like, you're looking at maybe a month delay, not like 6 months delay.
Right.
I would think. But.
But who knows?
Who knows? Nobody knows.
No, I mean, and there's some speculation that this is a, you know, they look at the competitive landscape right now and they think this is not like far enough along. Although the beauty of it is that they, you know, I don't think they're changing the hardware, but they could getting the software to work better and maybe even rolling some other stuff into it. And
yeah, adding that Shazam support.
At some point, you got to ship it though, right? At some point, sure. you got to just let it out into the world. That's a great
one.
Good question.
The next version is, you know, the definitive version, as it were, right? You know, you never know with these things, and a lot of times the first version comes out and you're like, oh, this is not bad, but it needs some work. And sometimes, you know, hey, they have a lot of experience rolling software updates. No reason that you probably couldn't. I honestly think the hardware is probably the least of their worries on this device.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you on that stage, because I do think the biggest question for them is going to be, and it's not a small thing, it's Siri, right? Like we talked about in the past, it's a question of whether Siri on a standalone device is going to match up to what the Echo and Google Home users have gotten out of theirs. Right. And there's a reason they're not making that the primary selling point, because it is a much tougher category than wireless multi-room speaker.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm interested. It's on my list.
So we're mid December 15th right now. I think we'll do one more of these this year. Are you going somewhere, or are you around next week?
Well, no, not really. I'm in the past several years. So pretty much for my entire life up until last year, I always went to upstate New York to Rochester for Christmas. But last year we kind of made a play to have people come to Boston, because there are a lot of us in Boston now of my family, and because I was on my way back from India and Germany and didn't necessarily want to turn around and jump in a car for 6 hours. And so this year that has continued, but it's also added the wrinkle of not all of my family is making the trip this year. Some of the older folks are staying in Rochester, so we'll have a somewhat smaller Christmas this year, but it will be here. And then we'll be turning around on Christmas Day and driving up to my girlfriend's parents' house, which is in New Hampshire, which is also a lot easier to do from here, because if you try to do that from Rochester, New York, and drive to the White Mountains, there's not a good way to do that, and it takes a very long time. So this way at least makes it easier for us to sort of split the difference and be able to spend time with both families. But it's reduced my travel obligations for the winter, which I have to say I'm not entirely displeased about.
Yeah, it's true. Well, so maybe next week. And if not, then the week after, I'm not going anywhere either. We'll catch up and maybe talk about the year, or maybe talk about like
what's coming,
what we predict for 18 or something. We'll work something out. I had a great idea yesterday about, because I haven't done any like traditional holiday guide. Although you totally need to do a board game thing.
Yeah, I do need to do it. I've been thinking about that, because I have played some new games this year. I gotta say, I look at my shelf and see what I got.
And I'm just gonna knock out. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna knock out some posts about stuff I'm using that I'm liking. I'm just gonna like leave it at that. I'm not gonna make it a best of the year or here's some categories. I think I'm just gonna write some stories, or maybe one big story about stuff that I'm using that I like. And it's not even gonna be. I was inspired by ATP actually again. While I was cooking dinner, I was listening to the live stream, and there was an Ask ATP question about like gift guide recommendations and all that, and I like that at one point Marco just started listing like kitchen gadgets, and I was like, oh, actually I've got some things I could write about there. So I'm just going to put together a list of like stuff that I've used this year that I've liked and put it out there. But I think that's the limit of my gift guide for this year.
Yeah, it's always hard to come up with those things, as we know from our experiences.
We are you're one person. You know, when you're at Macworld and you're compiling a list, right, out of a staff, there's a whole collection of things you can do. But when you're one person, it's like, my life does not change
exactly
that much in a year where I've totally changed all the things that I do, and now I have a whole bunch of new things to recommend. It's like, that doesn't happen. So I'll throw in the stuff that I have discovered and that I like, and
I'll do a quick list of book recommendations. It's only got one book on it, so it's gonna be short.
All right, that's good.
That's how I roll.
Hey, maybe you'll win some awards for that book.
That's not gonna happen. Yeah.
Well, you never know. You have friends in high places. Maybe they'll make.
Do
it happen.
I should find those people.
Yeah, just talk to them. All right. Well, we will be back for at least for one more. I think we'll take a little holiday break, but we'll be back for one more. But thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We appreciate it. And yes, we'll do one more this year. And then I guess I will perhaps then have the moving of the feed, the ceremonial moving of the feed to a new location.
Moving of the feed.
And I'll post something in this feed that explains exactly what you need to do to find the new feed address. And it'll
turn around three times, spit over fine. Your left shoulder.
Yeah.
And take a pinch of salt.
It'll all be good. Anyway, so thanks to everybody out there, and happy holidays. We'll be back one more time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.